Next Saturday, we will return to 12 noon with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We will be at 12 noon unless the Jets play an afternoon game, in which case we will be 6 hours before puck drop. So 12 noon next Saturday, the Jets will be in Columbus to meet the Blue Jackets on Halloween. So you can be sure to set your clocks accordingly and set your Illegal Curve timers, which I'm sure you all have, to make sure that 12 noon next Saturday with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to have provided funding to over 200 organizations in 2014, supporting projects and programs that would otherwise go unfunded or underfunded. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon, we'll be there this coming Thursday, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend. He's with TSN.ca, senior hockey correspondent Frank Saravelli. Frank, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Good to be back with you.
Yes, always appreciate your time, Frank. I want to just sort of look around the NHL at some number of different topics starting the season. We've got to start in Montreal. The Montreal Canadiens 8-0 to start. They absolutely destroyed the Buffalo Sabres last night by a 7-2 margin. How impressed? I mean, obviously, when you're perfect through eight games, you're very impressed. But, I mean, does this change the ceiling that you give the Montreal Canadiens for the entirety of the 2015-16 NHL season?
Probably. I think it, especially in Montreal specifically, it increases that ceiling to the point where people start thinking about that that drive for the next Stanley Cup. And I don't think that's unreasonable to have that in their thoughts at this point. And I think, to me, there's a lot of things that their start has been, impressive. Obviously, Carey Price has been great. But I think the one thing I've looked at is some of the numbers. I'm not sure that all of their possession metrics are something that's going to be sustainable throughout the season. I mean, you're looking at guys that are 10% above their career average. And I think those things will eventually regress to their mean. But you keep hearing that the Canadiens are playing a different way, a more complete way, quote-unquote, the right way. And I looked to, after the game the other night, St. Louis Blues coach Ken Hitchcock said that the Canadiens are by far the best team that the Blues have played so far, and they're not off to a sluggish start themselves. So he said that and said that they're the most complete team in the way that they've played, the most hungry team. So a lot of positives to draw on. I'm just wondering, obviously, you're not going to stay perfect forever, but I'm wondering how sustainable that some of those possession metrics are.
Frank, going back to the big news of earlier this week, and I know you wrote about it for TSN, the Blue Jackets firing Todd Richards after starting off the season 0-7. How shocked were you that John Tortorella was named the new head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Shocked just in the sense that I'm sure he probably is too, just because so many people thought that after the way his run in Vancouver ended, that that was it. That was going to be the final straw of his career, and we might not ever see him again. And I think it speaks to, this hiring speaks, one, to both what Columbus needed or was looking for in a coach, both for the team and the marketplace. They wanted an impact name, and they also wanted a name that a guy that would be not afraid to bark at some of his players. We've already seen that already with Ryan Johansson being benched and him reportedly being told in the third period by Tortorella that he's out of shape, which is amazing because it's a one-goal game. The team's trying to pick up their first win, and you put your star player on the bench for most of the third period. But I think a lot of people were surprised, but I think also there wasn't really that many qualified coaching candidates that were out there that were also available. So Columbus needed to make a change. That part wasn't surprising. I think just maybe the name was a bit surprising.
Frank, you wrote about it on TSN, as you mentioned, obviously, on TSN here. Ottawa and Eugene Melnyk trying to get a game close to or on Parliament Hill. What's the progress on that?
Well, there hasn't been a ton of progress so far, just in the sense that it's such a ways off. I know that the Senators are continuing to push for it. There's a lot of logistical hurdles, both getting the federal government to clear it and also trying to find a setup that would eventually work. And there's some out there that believe that part of this Parliament Hill talk is some posturing by the senators, just because maybe the setup that they would have at TD Place Stadium isn't ideal just a few weeks after the Grey Cup is supposed to be hosted there in 2017. So it looks like this game would be played in December of 2017, right around the anniversary of the first NHL game back in 1917. And it would just be, of course, a few weeks after the Grey Cup, and they would already have a lot of temporary seating in place at TD Stadium. So perhaps some of this is posturing to get a better deal with the stadium, and perhaps some of it, too, of course, is they'd like to play at Parliament Hill. I'm just not so sure how logistically feasible it is.
It would be an awesome game. We're joined by Frank Saravelli, TSN senior hockey reporter. And you mentioned the Senators and their outdoor game. We know that the Jets were hoping to do an outdoor game sort of on the heels of the Grey Cup in Winnipeg this year, and that didn't end up happening for whatever reason. I think, you know, the Bombers, the tenants or the owners of the stadium were hesitant that it would affect ticket sales for their Grey Cup if there was going to be an outdoor game right afterwards. So that's something obviously we'll have to keep an eye on there in Ottawa. Frank, you also wrote about this this week on TSN.ca. For the first time in the 98-year history of the NHL, Canadians do not make up the majority of the NHL's players. You know, how surprised were you when we know that the number has been dropping, you know, closer and closer to 50% over the last number of years, but you know, how surprised were you that finally it's reached the threshold where only 49.7% of NHL players were born in Canada?
It's probably inevitable in a lot of ways, just looking at the relatively small population of Canada as compared to the U.S. and also the global footprint that the games had around the world. So, you know, the interesting thing to me is not so much that Canada has dipped below 50%. I think a lot of people saw that coming eventually. I think it's more so the fact that they dipped below 50% and the U.S. isn't at an all-time high. They're just around 24%. They were closer to 25% last year, and people are expecting that number to continue to grow as we see 8 players in the league now from California and 2 from Texas and 2 from North Carolina, these non-traditional hockey markets. And, of course, Austin Matthews, the projected number one pick, is from Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, there's just a lot of changes throughout the league and trends, and I think this one was an interesting one to keep an eye on. But it's probably going to continue to dip even further. And, you know, I'm not very good at math, but I'm sure someone out there could project eventually at what point would the U.S. players and Canadian players be on par in the NHL. I'm thinking that's probably in the distant future still, but I think the important thing to point out too is, you know, Canada's still by and large producing the best players, just looking back to the 2014 and 2010 Olympics, and they can defend that title at the next best on best tournament at the World Cup of Hockey next year.
Frank, Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported today that Jaden Schwartz is going to be out for quite some time, undergoing surgery for that fractured ankle. He's going to be reevaluated in 12 weeks, with Paul Stastny out 4 to 5 weeks, and then you've also got Patrick Berglund out. What do you think is going to happen in St. Louis? Is there a chance that Doug Armstrong is going to have to make a move here for a forward early in the season?
I'm not sure. I think they've been rolling at such a clip that they could probably find some sort of temporary replacement in their own organization to fill the stopgap for now. I'm not so sure that they're going to be pulling the trigger on anything much bigger at this moment, because, of course, in order to do that, you need to give something up, and I'm not sure that Doug Armstrong wants to do that at this point. So something to watch moving forward, but I do think there will be other moves around the league as we progress here, and some of these starts continue to, I don't want to say fester, but if you look at a team like Calgary, for instance, if they continue to go down the road that they're going down, I don't see Bob Hartley being on the chopping block after winning the Jack Adams Award just 4 months ago, but some changes certainly could be in play for Calgary.
Frank, you had an interesting interview. I really enjoyed it with Jim Nill this week. Well, he seems like a really, you know, insightful guy and fairly forthright, especially in terms of managers in the league, some of who keep things pretty close to the vest. Was there one thing that stood out when you spoke to Jim Nill about his squad and maybe the game itself?
Well, obviously the Stars are, he's built the Stars into one of the premier teams in the league already, and I think people are just finally starting to pay attention and notice that with the start that they're off to atop the Western Conference. But, you know, for me, the most interesting thing that Nils said was asking him about the evolution of the game, and obviously rosters have changed a lot with such a focus toward youth and speed, but I asked him, what's coming next? What are the next things that we can look for in terms of how rosters are constructed? And he said he thinks the next evolution of the game is special teams. He thinks at this point, the way it's so hard to score at even strength, that there's going to be that much more of an emphasis placed on power play and particularly penalty kill as well. He said, you look at the teams that are winning night in and night out, you're seeing teams that either score two power play goals or don't give up any. So he's looking, has an eye toward the future with that, and that's just something that they've talked about internally, but wouldn't be surprised to see that trend continue.
We're joined by TSN senior hockey correspondent Frank Saravelli discussing the NHL as a whole. Frank, you know, we saw that obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets in their 0-8 start cost Todd Richards his job earlier this week. You look over to Anaheim, and this is a team where, you know, entering the season, it was really, I think, most people's favorite for either winning the Western Conference or the Stanley Cup in itself. 1-4-1 to start the year. They can't score. They've got 6 goals in 6 games. How much longer of a rope does Bruce Boudreau have?
True, the guy's gone to the conference finals. He's had a bad start. They're going to fire him?
I'm asking Frank. Yeah. I'm not asking you, Richard. I'll ask you later. Frank, what's your thoughts on this?
I'm not sure how long the rope is. I think in some ways, Anaheim expected a little bit of a tough start with such a big turnover in their roster. A third of their roster was almost changed in the offseason. So I don't think they expected to perhaps jump out of the gate, but I also don't think they expected the bottom to fall out the way that it has so far. You look at their scoring, it's way down. I think Perry, Getzlaff, and Kessler only have 1 point apiece, and I'm not sure if any of those are goals. Most of the Ducks, I think 5 or 6 goals have been from their defensemen. So, you know, really tough start for them. I'm not sure how long the rope is. And I think when you're considering all your options, Bruce Boudreau is obviously a good coach. Just look at his NHL record. I mean, it's really impressive. But you also need to look, if you're going to make some sort of change like that, who else is available? I already mentioned how kind of thin the coaching market was, and I'm not sure that the Ducks are a team that's built to the point where you could bring in sort of one of these unheralded guys. I know that they have a supposed coach in waiting in Paul McLean on the bench, but I'm not sure how much sense that would make, since he obviously already has an input on the team already. So wouldn't be too much of a change since he's been around there for the last couple months, but I would expect Bruce to at least hang on to his job a bit longer. But if this continues to play out the way that it has so far over the next week or 10 days, I think all bets are off in that case.
Frank, this is a few days ago, but I thought you had a really nice piece, interesting piece on TSN about empty net goals and how coaches seem to be pulling their goaltenders earlier. Everyone knows that Patrick Waugh was kind of the first one to do that, especially at the NHL level, pulling the goalie with 3 or 4 minutes left. But I guess the question about the article, do you see coaches doing this less, even though it worked for John Hines earlier in the season, but do you see coaches doing this less as they find it to not work as much? And have you heard anything that the NHL is a little bit upset about this artificially inflating those goal numbers, or are they going to take those goals however they come?
Yeah, I think for sure they're going to take them however they come, but I think we're going to continue to see coaches pull as early as possible, because statistically, it does give them the best chance to tie the game, particularly in one-goal games. So you look at the numbers, and they say that the best time to pull a goalie, believe it or not, in a one-goal game to give you the best opportunity to tie it is with 6 minutes left. I don't think we're going to see coaches start to pull quite that early in a one-goal game, but certainly getting closer and closer to that. The average league-wide was around 1:15 last year. I think it's well over 2 minutes this year, so that number's continuing to creep up, but you know, for now, I think it's going to stay relatively the same.
Yeah, Frank, final question for you. Of course, you covered the Flyers for many years. Not too much attention really on that squad this year, but Dave Hakstol, just down the road here from UND, starting off, Flyers are 3-2-1 in his first 6 games. So how would you say that they're you know, receiving? Are the players receptive to Hakstol, I guess, is the question? And because that adjustment from college to pros doesn't happen as often in hockey as other sports.
Yeah, I think they're adjusting quite well, actually. They've been sort of one of the quietly better teams, more improved teams around the league, and I think the big thing is that they're really playing with more structure. I think that's one thing that you can see. And, you know, I think the amazing thing is when you look at the start that they've had, six games, they're 3-2-1, but Jake Voracek only has 3 points and no goals. So yeah. They've been able to do it without their top line really producing the way that it's capable of. And I think once that finally starts to click, this could be a little bit more of a dangerous team than some people realize.
Frank Saravelli is TSN's senior hockey reporter. You can see all of his great work on TSN.ca. Frank, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Frank. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Frank Saravelli for joining us here on the program. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get the entire show sent to you each and every week. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional style deli. Take it home or eat in their full service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I mentioned the Anaheim Ducks in talking to Frank Saravelli last segment. Richard obviously did not appreciate the question.
No, it's not, I just think Drew, I mean, hey, the Columbus Blue Jackets are 0-8 for the first time anybody's been 0-8 in like 70 years.
Right. Okay?
Whatever it is. The Anaheim Ducks were in Game 7, and I've certainly been critical of Bruce Boudreau's big game coaching ability. I think his teams often get blown out in big games. You know, Game 7, Ducks, Kings, Game 7, Hawks, Ducks. These games are over by the end of the first period. And Game 7, Capitals, Penguins, too. Having said all that, if you fire a coach this early in the season after a struggling start, then you didn't trust him in the first place. So why didn't you just fire him in the offseason? And that's what I understand. I mean, okay, Todd Richards is that exception because it doesn't happen so rarely. It hasn't happened in many years. But Bruce Boudreau, the guy's going to get off to a slow start on a veteran team. And we saw, well, let's be honest here, Chicago Blackhawks sleepwalk through last season. The team in the regular season was unrecognizable to the team that turned it up in the playoffs. Anaheim is all veterans. Getzlaf, Perry, Kessler, they add in Bieksa. I mean, the whole squad, I mean, they have a couple young defensemen, but the whole squad are veterans for the most part. So what do veterans do, and they look at their division? It's not the hardest division ever. You think they're panicking? I mean, what did they win the division by last year? Mm. They were in the playoffs, they were first place comfortably even January. So don't panic, you know? I just think that everybody's too quick, and I'm not the Bruce Boudreau's biggest fan, he's been a very good regular season coach, but we're going to talk about firing. If they had this record in the middle of January over that same game span, if you look at the standings and you say, okay, Anaheim right now in six games is 1-4-1, as you said, Drew. If they went 1-4-1 in January, would anybody even talk about it?
No, that's a fair point. But if they go, let's say another six games go by, and they're starting a very difficult stretch right now. They're heading into the Central Division for the next four games, if I'm not mistaken.
If they win a game, they're 2 points.
Yeah, they play in a bad division.
Drew, they play coming up. They lost 5-1 to Nashville last game. They play Minnesota, yeah. Chicago, Dallas, and St. Louis, two teams that the Jets have coming up as well.
And then Nashville, but at home again.
Yeah, so their stretch is difficult coming up. But to Richie's point, Bruce Boudreau's not getting fired. I like Bruce Boudreau a lot. I know that he's had trouble in Game 7s, and he's had trouble getting them to the Stanley Cup Finals, but it's way too early to start talking about that. And maybe I shouldn't be saying that because I was the guy that picked Todd Richards to win Coach of the Year three weeks ago.
Let me ask you, if the next five games, if they go 1-4 in the next five games, a very difficult stretch, yeah, four very difficult road
games. I still don't think
games,
he gets fired.
If they're 1-4 and their record at the record becomes 2-8-1.
I still don't think he's fired. I think
it depends on where they are in the division. I mean, you look at the division, Drew.
Yeah.
And the best team is 4-3.
Right.
The best team is the Kings.
The division's terrible. It's the worst division in hockey. Nobody will ever argue that point with you. But they're not playing in the division for the next four games, five games.
I appreciate that, but they're playing how far they are from the top of the division, I think, dictates that.
Okay, let's get away from the firing Bruce Boudreau aspect.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's more possible than it should be. But I think that's still too early. You can't take the team to two conference finals, right? I mean, and then get rid of him after 10 to 15 games of terrible play. If you're close to the first in that place, now if you're in the Central and you fall back 15 points, yeah, then okay, I can see it. I see less panic in the Pacific.
So the best thing that Bruce Boudreau has going for him is the fact that his team plays in a terrible division.
In my opinion, yeah.
Okay, then why the struggles? I mean, you look at this roster.
It's simple. They're not scoring.
Well, they've scored one goal a game.
They've been shut out three times.
Yeah.
Mike Santarelli is leading them in scoring right now, by the way. So if you want to go through, you know.
They've scored six goals. Four of them came in one game.
Perry's got 1 point in six games. Getzlaff's got 1 point in six games. Kessler's got 1 point. I mean, you want to go up and down the roster? I mean, this Ducks team is very good. I think they're going to turn this around really quickly, by the way. And we should probably get Sean to be recording this because they're probably not going to turn around and Boudreau's going to be fired and I'm going to look like an idiot again. But no, I mean, yeah. I honestly do believe that. I mean, this Ducks team is good, guys. And Freddie Anderson is a good goalie. He proved last year that he's a legitimate number one goaltender. But this team has come out of the gates very sluggish. And we've seen this before. We saw that happen just the season with Columbus.
I thought I was wrong. It's conference semifinals. They lost to the Kings, obviously. So they've been to one conference finals.
Yeah, and apologies. That's that. And, you know, this is a team that isn't going to be just happy with making the playoffs, Richie. I mean, this is a team that has aspirations to go all the way and win a Stanley Cup. I mean, the players that they have on this team and going out and acquiring Carl Hagelin and Kevin Bieksa was a veteran defenseman who replaces Francois Beauchemin, who went to Colorado. I mean, this team will get it going, but you have to be concerned if you're Bob Murray because this team just isn't scoring, and that has never been a problem for this team. So, it's simple. You got to get the offense going here coming up on this road trip, four games against the Central Division, and it's as simple as that. But, I mean, I think it's way too early, again, to be talking about Bruce Boudreau. I know you wanted to get away from that, but The Ducks look like a team that's got a little bit of a hangover from last year.
Yeah, that's possible, right? And one thing about Boudreau is they've gotten better each year playoff-wise, right? So they lose big games again, and they lost, as I mentioned, big time to the Kings. And
by the way, Richie, I've also got a hangover right now.
They lost Game 7 to the Red Wings the year before that, too, so they lost three Game 7s in a row.
Yep.
All of which were on home ice, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yes.
I mean, it just seems to me that it's... I mean, bizarre. Forget about the firing of Bruce Boudreau aspect. Because
people are just so, in this day and age,
they're quick to fire people.
Everyone wants to fire everybody. Absolutely. Everybody's got a solution.
I agree with you. I agree.
Just let it sit for a bit.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. It's just amazing to me that a team with this much offensive talent, Getzlaff, Perry,
but it's six
Hagelin.
Games. If this happened in the middle of the season, we wouldn't even be talking about it. We wouldn't even notice. We wouldn't register.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, and that's a fair point you make. It just, you know, the question is, unfortunately for, you know, the Bruce Boudreaus and unfortunately for the Todd Richards, it happens at the beginning of the year and it's everyone says, you know, you can't let it spiral out of control. And that's why they make the changes when, you know, if this was January and they were a 500 team and then they went on a bad six-game stretch, nobody would notice anything. At the beginning of the year, you're always concerned that before you know it, you're out of the playoff race.
Drew, the Wild are in town tomorrow to play the Jets. The Ducks play the Wild tomorrow in Minnesota.
They can't do that, Ezzy. It's impossible.
Sorry, I meant to say...
Aren't they playing here?
That's what I meant to say.
The Ducks play the Wild tonight.
Are the Ducks playing the Wild against the Jets here tomorrow?
It's a three-way game.
Okay,
it's 3D hockey.
They each get the zone?
Yeah, it's exactly.
Let me start that again. The Ducks play the Wild tonight in Minnesota, and then Minnesota plays in Winnipeg tomorrow.
Yes, you got that right.
The Ducks are a desperate team coming off a 5-1 loss to Nashville. They got to start scoring tonight, and that could end up benefiting the Jets because the Ducks, we know, are a heavy team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get some goals because, you know, you look back, getting shut out by Colorado early in the season, the third game of the season, they were shut out by the Coyotes. I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I'm shocked. I'm shocked by the way the Jackets have started, and I'm shocked by the way the Ducks have started. I didn't see this coming. But to Richie's point, I mean, it's seven games here, six games, six or seven games, whatever. I mean, let's see how this road trip plays itself out before we start getting too crazy and start saying that the Ducks are going to miss the playoffs or they're going to have to start firing Boudreaux. This is still a very good team here that was one game away from going to the Stanley Cup final. So
next Saturday, if this has been a bad week for the Ducks, I think this conversation is a lot different next Saturday.
I don't disagree. I just don't think it should be that way.
Well, that's fine. The warranted, I'm not going to argue with if it's warranted. It's not. But in this day and age, you know, I mean,
if there's still a few, in my opinion, if there's still a few points out of the within striking range of that first, second spot in the division, I think he's got some rope. But if those guys go on a winning streak, Drew, and they lose a bunch, and these, I mean, I just find it funny. The guy puts in years and gets this team. You know, Randy Carlyle gets let go. He comes in mid-season there, Bruce Boudreaux. Mm-hmm. Changes the dynamic there for sure. And again, he's got his flaws. He's done a real nice job. The guy gets off to a slow start 1 year. No expectations are high, and boom, he's gone. I just think, how much did you really want him there in the first place? Remember, Bob Murray brought him in here. This isn't a case where, like we talked about Columbus this week, and we got to go to break here, Drew. Jarmo Kekalainen came in after Todd Richards. Now, we don't even know if that was Jarmo Kekalainen's choice to bring in Tortorella. But the point is, it's not his guy. Wasn't his guy. In this case, Bob Murray hired him. It's his guy. You'd think he'd stay with him.
We'll find out. We'll see if the Anaheim Ducks can turn it around this coming week. Big week for them against a bunch of Central Division opponents. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some key injuries for Central Division teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. It's an IC Saturday here on TSN 1290. Big day here on the fine radio station. Still to come this afternoon, Blue Bomber game day with Westy and Walby and Darren. And then, of course, we will have the Moose in action later on. Our good friend Mitch Peacock will have the call of the Moose game later on this evening here.
Bombers can still make the playoffs, right?
The Bombers can mathematically still make the playoffs, but they did not get any help last night.
Yes.
As both the BC Lions and the Montreal Alouettes were victorious. I believe the Bombers have to win out and then hope that the other two teams lose out, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not 100% sure. I know that the Bombers have the tiebreaker over the Lions on the strength of their two victories. And for Montreal to cross over and get the Western Conference playoff spot, they will have to finish with more wins than the Bombers or the Lions. So the Bombers mathematically still alive.
I have to say, I'm only a casual Bomber fan. I go to a couple games a year, but have they not got the best weather this year for games?
Yeah, they have had very good weather, I'm pretty sure, most of the games.
Beautiful every day, like even today, about 10 and clear on a
in the late October day, you'll take that, absolutely. The problem with the Bombers has been the performance on the field.
Yeah, but I mean, part of it's going outside and just enjoying
the
outdoors.
Well, we said that this months ago, we went to the home opener, the three of us, and we had a great time, even though the Bombers got lost. But I think they got doubled.
That was bad game.
But we didn't actually sit down at all in the second half. We pulled a hustler and just hung out at the Rum Hut.
Don't you still owe me $10? For that beer?
I doubt it.
Oh. I just thought of that.
I might. You're not going to get it from me.
I bought you that beer and then that jumbo dog, and I don't think you ever paid me for that.
Probably. Not going to
now.
If
the Jets play the Wild and the Ducks tomorrow, who's going to win the game?
It's going to be an entertaining three-way battle between the Jets, Wild, and Ducks tomorrow night. We've been a little mean to Ezzy. We should stop being so mean to Ezzy, Richard.
Ezzy's the best.
Ezzy is the best. Agree.
You know what? I'm a big boy. I can handle it.
There you go.
NHL news and notes.
News and notes for this Saturday morning, and we start with a number of injuries. We start with St. Louis, where on the heels of losing Paul Stastny to a broken right foot, he didn't play, obviously, last Sunday in Winnipeg. We knew there was an injury. It's now been revealed. He's out for 5 weeks with a broken right foot. Yesterday in practice, and this is just a terrible injury, Jaden Schwartz, he's going to be out with a fractured ankle. He had surgery this morning. He'll be reevaluated in 12 weeks from now. 3 months they're going to be without Jaden Schwartz. 1 month they're going to be without Paul Stastny. They're still without Patrick Berglund right now. Kevin Shattenkirk, I believe, is still out of the lineup. Serious injury problems for the St. Louis Blues, especially up front with their forward group. Do you expect that they're going to make, you asked Frank Saravelli about it, do you expect they're going to make a move to try and bring in some offensive talent?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one, Drew, in that you have a lot of players on this team who can play center but generally play the wing. and Alex Steen, you know, has played center many times, you know, for years, and is playing on the wing with Laterra in the middle. Gomez is a guy who can play center and has played the wing before. Steve Ott, Brodziak, not guys you want to elevate necessarily, and Berglund. I mean, a bunch of these guys are centers who can play the wing. Now, Berglund is an interesting case because he's close to coming back, and he has skill. David Backes isn't skating as well as he used to. You wonder if they'd like to keep him on the wing, and maybe they throw Berglund up in the middle with Backes on the right, or Backes and Brouwer on his wings. Oh, that's two right-handed guys and right shot guys. Maybe Brouwer on his off wing because he's got a pretty good shot. They have options on the team, but they're limited options. I just don't think with the roster as it's currently constructed, they're going to do too much. Drew, I think they have depth to withstand this. I think Ken Hitchcock will tell you, he doesn't want injuries, but they're going to buy in even more when there are injuries, buy into the way he wants to play. And I think, you know, Colton Perico, I believe that's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
He was a pleasant surprise, I thought, last game. He's kind of taken up a void, really helped their depth on defense. And I think my point there is they're going to have some guys getting opportunities. You know, Robbie Fabry is going to be coming back shortly, they think, from a concussion. It's another injury. But give him an opportunity, a scoring guy. I mean, Jaden Schwartz is a really smart, but didn't get off to a great start. Really smart player, excellent on the forecheck, makes their team better. Simply makes their team better. Paul Stastny is a smart player as well. So their hockey IQ goes down with those two injuries, and Shattenkirk as well. But if they're going to play that heavy style, they're not the quickest team, the fastest team. But Berglund will help with their speed. I think they're going to be able to hang around. They're not going to be great without these guys, but they're going to be, I think, hang around enough to make the playoffs. I just don't think, again, I don't think you can also trade an asset here. As you're a deep forward group if you're healthy, and I realize they're not healthy. I don't think you can trade an asset here to get a forward when, in reality, you're probably holding that asset to the end to get a goalie.
And, Richie, you just mentioned this. I mean, it looks like almost right now, as it stands early on here, the St. Louis Blues are this year's Columbus Blue Jackets, and we hope that this doesn't continue, but we already knew about Patrick Berglund. But
in terms of their injuries, you're saying.
Exactly, and with Jaden Schwartz being out, that's the big one. He's going to be out for three or four months here, at least 4 months with surgery. And Paul Stastny, I mean, that's a month. I mean, a month goes quickly, and that's usually about 8 to 10 games. But to Richie's point, they have players. They're a deep team here on forward and on defense, more so on forward. But they have players that can move to center if they need to. And, you know, Richie mentions Laterra and Backes, and they brought in Gomez on a PTO.
I've been critical of Gomez, obviously.
That's one of my all-time favorite players.
He looked all right last week.
I like him dating back to the days with the Devils. He won the Rookie of the Year, if you remember. So, I mean, Gomez is a great depth player. Ideally, they'd want him, kind of being an extra forward or whatever, but now he's seen minutes on the power play and everything like that. But so I agree 100% with Richie. I'm not disagreeing a lot with Richie today, but I can't because I think they're going to... Exactly, it's your birthday, Richie. I can't disagree with you. But when you look at this team, they'll have enough guys to replace Stastny and Schwartz. But the problem is Stastny and Schwartz, those are two guys in your top six. So whenever you lose two guys in your top six, that's going to affect your goal scoring. And yeah, you know, Richie mentions they're going to have to even be better defensively. It's a very good defensive team. And, you know, Hitchcock's going to stress that even more with those guys out of the lineup.
Absolutely.
But we saw this team come in here and, you know, they'll still have Alex Steen. They'll still have Vladimir Tarasenko. I think Laterra is getting more comfortable in his second year in the NHL. Jaskin, I mean, they've still got a lot of talent there. Richie mentioned Robbie Fabry, who was a 2014 first rounder. I mean, they'll be fine, but that's a tough one with Schwartz, a guy who had a breakout year last year for them. Mm-hmm. So you hope that they're able to weather the storm here if you're a Blues fan. And they just don't have any more injuries because, you know, we don't want to see a situation like we had last year with Columbus losing however many hundred games due to injury, but they'll be fine. They're just such a structured team. Ken Hitchcock, you know, always has this team ready to go. They rarely get hammered. They're always in games, always in low-scoring games. So I don't think this is necessary. Put it this way, Drew, I don't think the St. Louis Blues, you know, this is going to, you know, set them off course. And, you know, this is going to start a downward spiral and they're not going to make the playoffs. I think they're just such a good structure team. And Richie also mentioned the defense. I mean, it's a top five defense. We talked about it last week when we were going team by team. So they'll be fine. You get Shattenkirk back. You get Berglund back. I don't think they're going to be making too many big moves. They already made the big move with Oshie and Brower anyways, right? Yeah. So
in Chicago, they lose Duncan Keith for 4 to 6 weeks after he undergoes surgery to repair a meniscal tear in his right knee. Now, you know, Chicago's 4 to 6 weeks, you know, it's not the end of the world, obviously, but it's not a deep defense to begin with, and no, now you're not. Without Duncan Keith, who really
that's
is the
loss,
catalyst for that entire team.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best player on their roster, I thought, last year through the playoff run for the Cup. One of the smartest players in the league, exceptional skater, point on the power play. I mean, he's, you know, he's a top 3 to 5 defenseman in the National Hockey League. You lose him on a team that doesn't have a lot of depth on the back end for 4 to 6 weeks, it's a huge loss. Who's eating those minutes?
Yeah, and you saw Brent Seabrook, I think he had 3 or 4 points in the first game after Duncan Keith went out with an injury. And but Brent Seabrook, even though he's a top defenseman, I mean, you just don't replace Duncan Keith. If P.K. Subban goes out of the lineup, you can't replace P.K. Subban. Erik Karlsson goes out of the lineup, you can't replace these guys. These are top defensemen. Mm-hmm. And again, you hope that he's not out for longer than that, because if you're getting into a couple months, then you're really going to miss him. But this is an opportunity again. You know, Richie talks about opportunity. You're talking about Trevor Van Riemsdyk, David Rundblad. You're talking about Trevor Daly, who came over from Dallas. You know, it's those are going to be the guys that eat up those minutes, along with, you know, Seabrook and Jarmelson, their top second and third best defensemen there. But it's bad. And the Chicago Blackhawks, even though, you know, they're doing pretty well right now, they're not off to a bad start by any means.
4-3 to start the season.
I mean, you know, it's a little bit, you know, a little bit of struggles. And this forward group has changed over big time.
Sure.
I know Panarin's having a good rookie year.
Great rookie year.
And, you know, Artem Anisimov is taking a little bit of time to get going there on that second line with Patrick Kane, who obviously has not you know, slowed down from last year's playoffs. But we always say this on the show, right, Rich? I mean, Duncan Keith can control a game.
Well,
he controls the game. And when you don't have a guy like that,
does,
that allows the other team
100%
to do things that they 100%. Wouldn't be able to do.
You look at him, he plays the most minutes on the team at even strength out of their defensemen. He plays 2 seconds less than Chalmerson on the penalty kill, but essentially the top on the short hand, on the PK as well. And he plays the most defenseman minutes on the power play. So he is your go-to guy in every single situation. Now you don't have him anymore. And you're going to replace him with a guy, whoever it is, who's nowhere close. Not even in the same ballpark as him.
Yeah. The difference, one of the big differences, and we were talking, going back to sort of the discussion about the Anaheim Ducks, is the Blackhawks play in the best division in hockey.
Yes.
So while the Ducks are always going to remain in striking distance, the Blackhawks, who
absolutely
currently
Drew.
Are out of the playoffs, you know, obviously 7 games in, but if you're without Duncan Keith for 10 games or 12 games or 15 games and you're not, and you, you know, lose ground as a result of that.
I would be concerned. I'm not as concerned about Anaheim, I'd be concerned.
I mean, you look at that, the Central Division is going to be a beast, just like it was last year. It's going to be a beast.
It is, absolutely.
And if the Blackhawks fall behind as a result of losing Duncan Keith to an injury, it's going to be a significant uphill battle.
I wouldn't be surprised that happens. I think this injury is huge.
I'm not saying that it's not huge. I'm not as worried. I don't think that, you know, the Blackhawks are going to lose every single game while Duncan Keith is out
of
the lineup. I mean, they're going to lose a few games, but
if you're playing 500, is he like actual 500, which is not really 500 anymore.
Yeah. If you're playing, you know,
if you're win loss, you're going to lose a lot of ground here.
Yeah,
and right now you're 4-3.
Which you would say is an okay start, especially for a team coming off a Stanley Cup.
Izzy's right about it in terms of the way that they play, and you're in a pair, and there's different guys here that can contribute. I think it's going to be big on the goaltending here. I think that's where the pressure is going to be.
Yep, and Corey Crawford has struggled to varying degrees during the regular season and in the playoffs. And you're right. I mean, it's gonna be a huge test for the young defenseman that we mentioned, Van Riemsdyk in his second year. And you know, Trevor Daly's he's a veteran defenseman. He'll get the job done. Same thing with Seabrook and Jarmerson. But so I mean, it's a concern. But I just think, you know, this Hawks team, I think, hasn't fallen off as much as I think some people think they have from last year with all the transition and all that.
Well, I don't think that falling off is going to be the issue. The issue now is you lose the best player on your team, it's going to have a significant impact. And, you know, maybe he's not the best player, but he's certainly, him or Kane and Taves. One of them is the best player.
No, he's
on
their
that
best
team.
Player. I mean, Drew, he won the Conn Smythe. He's their best player.
Well, it's going to be a significant impact.
I think especially as a roster is put together, he's their most important player. And Best, and I want to get in that argument another day, but most important, if you have a top four that you rely on significantly, mm-hmm. you don't really have the depth to take the spot, then... I mean, maybe it's Van Riemsdyk. I don't know enough about Trevor Van Riemsdyk. I know enough about David Rumblett. It ain't going to be him.
Yeah.
Maybe Jonathan Toews can play defense.
Yeah. He might have to. Last one, the Calgary Flames have placed goaltender Kari Ramo on waivers. He clears waivers, thus freeing up the logjam of three goaltenders that they had. You surprised that Ramo got through waivers as easily as
you
did?
Yes. I'm surprised they put him on waivers and not Ortio either. I know that there was, you know, there's an age difference there, but... You know, Calgary, it's rare. We talked about this with George Johnson when we had him on last week.
The Calgary Herald.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Didn't Drew put an Oreo on waivers?
Hey.
Drew actually wouldn't waive an Oreo. Yeah,
they probably didn't want to do that. But, I mean, that shows you, though, Drew, that not only is there still a salary cap crunch, but, you know, it's tough to get
three
a job
goalies.
As a goaltender.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, Look at Winnipeg. Connor Hellebuck on some teams would already be in the NHL, right? I mean, but the Jets have Michael Hutchinson as Pavlik's backup.
It's true, Ezzy. It's if you're gonna have depth at one position, it's the worst position to have depth at only because you can't use two goalies at one time.
Look at what happened with Ottawa, right? Trading Robin Lehner. I mean, you know, Andrew Hammond comes in, and then all of a sudden you have an odd man out there.
I mean, Ramo hasn't been wasn't that much. I mean, he wasn't good. I watched it terrible, really. But like Taylor hasn't been any good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as he talks about Ortio, and that's kind of the thing about keeping him, and obviously have higher hopes for him. Is this the time now? I don't know. But when I watch Calgary, I personally think they're a top six forward and a good goaltender away from being the real deal. Well, and those aren't two insignificant holes. But to me, that's what they're one top six forward, because their defense is great. One top six forward and one good goaltender away from being a real threat.
Real struggles to start the year for Calgary. We'll see if they can start to
turn
it around.
Big win last night for them, but yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, big win last night at home against Detroit. They were down late in that game, and they tied it up and then won it in overtime.
Detroit's for another day. We'll talk about that on Wednesday probably. They're just all over the place.
Who's that?
Detroit.
You're not liking it?
Well,
we'll talk about it on Wednesday.
We'll talk about it on Wednesday.
Pencil it down. We'll mark it in for Wednesday's midweek show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Arizona Coyotes. They're off to a good start. We'll talk about if they can keep it going. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Domi to the front, Duclair, and he scores! Anthony Duclair, and he's tied it at one, and there's the power play goal.
And Oliver Ekman-Larsson up the hands on the Domi. And over to Duclair. That good speed finds that lane. How about this pass by Domi? That went right under the stick of Andy Green and onto the stick of Duclair and into the back of the net. That's how you get it done.
I have absolutely no idea what the future is of the Arizona Coyotes off the ice, but I know that on ice, the future is quite bright with Max Domi and Anthony Duclair. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows featuring great Canadian comic Rob Pugh. Check him out, rumorscomedyclub.com, for tickets. Arizona Coyotes, Max Domi, Anthony Duclair. They got Duclair, of course, from the New York Rangers last season in exchange for Keith Yandel at the trade deadline. The future is certainly bright for those.
Bad trade.
It was a bad trade for the New York Rangers.
We said it at the time, too. It's not revisionist history. We said it at the time.
Yeah. That's a bad trade, and there's no doubt about that. Can the Arizona Coyotes, playing in the Pacific Division, which we just spoke about, a terrible division in the NHL.
That's bad.
Can the Arizona Coyotes be this year's Calgary Flames?
Well, I mean, we talk all you want about the young players. If Mike Smith lights out 930, whatever it is, save percentage, and he's able to have that all year, maybe. I'm not saying yes for sure, but maybe. And I think one of the reasons it seems easy is that whenever they have no expectations, Dave Tippett does a pretty good job. When they seem to have any kind of expectations around them, they seem to struggle. And, you know, he has the youth now, and, I mean, they've always had some struggles. And this is something I want to say. Don Maloney has been very loyal to Dave Tippett. And I like that about him in the sense that they've had tough years. Expectations or not, they've still had some tough years regardless. So here, this year they have no expectations, and they're obviously off to a good start. But the point is, bad years or not, he says, I know this is the guy I want. This is a coach I feel comfortable with. This is a coach I'm going to go with. And I think that stability helps the young players.
I couldn't agree with you more, Rich. And, you know, to answer your question, Drew, I don't think that the Arizona Coyotes are going to be a playoff team this year. And it's nice that they've gotten off to the start and they lost their last game 4-1 to the Rangers. So that was a setback for them. But the fact that they came out of the gate and won their first three games, I cheered them last week on the show. I think it's great because there were no expectations, for this team. And Domi and Duclair are getting a lot of the headlines, Drew, and rightfully so. I mean, this is the future of the team. And then you throw in Dylan Strome, and Dylan Strome isn't in the NHL right now. He got sent back to junior. But Dylan Strome is their future number one center, right? So they drafted him third overall with those expectations. So, you know, you throw those guys, you know, together down the road here, and, you know, there's some hope. But I think it's, you know, I think unrealistic to expect this team, even though that Pacific division is really weak, Drew, I still think, you know, the Kings are better, the Sharks are better, the Ducks are better. And I only think three teams, again, are going to make it from that division. We all picked five teams to make it from the Central. So who of those three teams are they going to beat out, Richie? Kings are starting to play better.
Yeah.
The Sharks have been good this year. And the Ducks, I mean, come on. They got to turn this around here. There's just too much talent there. But I think the Coyotes are going to be better than maybe some people thought they were going to be. I think at the beginning of the season, I picked them to be a bottom three team. They still might be a bottom three team. Well, but I wouldn't be surprised if they finish a little bit closer up the Western Conference standings than you'd think, just because these two players are special players. And I agree with you guys. I think that Keith Yandel trade to the New York Rangers for Duclair was a mistake. Not a mistake. It was a bad trade because the Rangers did it, Richie, for obvious reasons.
I think it was a mistake.
They wanted to get better, more offensive on D. But, I mean, really, they were already good on D because of all the talent they already have there with Mark Stahl and Girardi, McDonough. We know all the guys there. But this Coyotes team are fun to watch, and I think it's great to see that this has kind of galvanized the fan base, because really, what else
fan
are you cheer, what else are you cheering for this year, right?
Crazy now, Ezzy.
I mean, this Coyotes team is in a rebuild, guys.
Yeah, they don't even. That's the thing I was gonna say. Like, they don't even want to be good. They want Austin Matthews from Scottsdale. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when they play elsewhere. No, but in reality, I mean, they don't want to be good. They want to have another forward up there,
right?
With or forward defenseman, it depends. With Duclair and with Domi, and obviously Ekman-Larsson is a stud back there on the back end. Their defense otherwise isn't very good, though. I mean, this team is not making the playoffs, Drew. I mean, if Smith keeps his .930 save percentage clip up or something like that and plays out of his mind for a long period of time, they have a shot. I don't think that's going to happen eventually. Their defense isn't good enough, and they're too young. Like, the talent you talk about young up front also means defensive lapses and different things like that. So I don't think this is sustainable, and I think they're going to fall off. And I think that's what the organization, frankly, wants for the long term, if you put a little truth serum in them.
Like, Michael Smith had a bad year last year, obviously, and he's playing better this year. But you look at the defense, Ekman-Larsson, Mahalik, Stone, Murphy, that's not Giordano, Russell, Weidman, and Brody. I mean, it just isn't. That top four was so good for Calgary last year. And then you throw in Dougie Hamilton, obviously. So it's a great story. Again, nobody's happier for the Coyotes than I am. I don't like to see this team, you know, struggle year after year. I don't think anybody does. It's nice to see a team kind of rise above those low expectations, really. I say that with 100% honesty. And, you know, Max Domi right now, I would say, might even be a leading candidate for the Calder Trophy above Connor McDavid, which is incredible to say. But he's certainly exciting to watch there with Duclair.
Dougie Hamilton, I've said to you guys before, that was a good value trade for Calgary. But I've said on the show many times, for years, I'm not a big fan of his game. Not the biggest fan. Stand by that. I mean, we talk about the Calgary eventually going to trade Weidman here, and he's going to be part of that top four. But, I mean, Dougie Hamilton is not a Ray Bourque. People are going to see. I mean, Dougie Hamilton is a good, solid puck-moving defenseman. He's a good player. I mean, you didn't trade, I think, a lot for him, knowing you're going to get your top four guy who can move the puck and has a good shot and all that stuff. But he might be the fourth best defenseman on that team.
On the Flames.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just reiterating that you're not crazy about Dougie Hamilton. Yeah.
Might be the fifth best defenseman.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go Weidman.
I'd say, ahead of Weidman.
Than, Chris Russell, real underrated. I think he's better than right now.
Well, back to the the Coyotes. You look at their, I mean, Domi, Hansel, Duclair, that line is just tearing
it up. Yeah, I mean,
Marty
Hansel, Drew, is a good veteran influence there. He's able to defend against the big players. He's not a great skater. He's not the most offensively gifted player, so he's not going to keep up that rate of score.
Nine assists so far. Zero goals, nine assists
right
now.
That's not
going
to continue.
No, and then Domi and Duclair, you know, playing above their years. Domi, 3 goals, 5 assists for 8 points. Duclair, 5 goals, 2 assists for 7 points.
They both have the skill, though.
They certainly have the skill. And you look at their prospect system, and of course, these are going to be guys coming in a year or two from now. And, I mean, Brendan Perlini was a first-round pick in 2014. They got Dylan Strome, who they drafted third overall. They got Nick Merkley, who's got all sorts of talent, but he's undersized.
Kelowna Rockets.
Yeah, Kelowna Rockets, you know, a guy that a lot of people thought the Jets might have been interested in the last draft. So there's a lot of young talent there for the Arizona Coyotes. And then, like you mentioned, they might be playing. I think they're too good to be in the Austin Matthews sweepstakes to their own detriment.
Well, let's see. Second first rounder, was that not also part of the Yandle trade? Because they had 2 first rounders this year.
Yeah.
They had 2 first rounders. Well, the first rounders this year were Nick Merkley. Yeah.
And Strome.
And Strome. So Merkley was 30th overall. Would that have been from the Rangers?
Yeah, the Rangers were the best team in the league last year. Yeah.
So they got Duclair and Nick Merkley for Keith Yandle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good.
So we didn't even mention that throw Merkley into
Keith
that
Yandle,
trade.
You can't trust defensively at all.
It was a bad trade. We said it when I remember we were in the press box when the trade happened at a Jets game. I guess it must have been the same time the Jets got Stempniak last year, right the day before the trade deadline or whatever it was.
It was a bad trade. We talked about Bufflin, and we're not going to get into that again now. We'll discuss that later, and we've talked about it many times. But it shows you what being proactive general manager and trading a guy a year and a half before or a year and a quarter before UFA status does in terms of getting value. A hell of a value for him, offensively inclined defenseman. And Bufflin's better than Yandle.
Especially on a team that's not going anywhere.
The Coyotes are going somewhere, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to John Rosen. He's the LA Kings insider. The Kings visit Winnipeg on Tuesday night, so we'll get updated on what's going on with Daryl Sutter and his squad. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 11:30 in the morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside the birthday boy himself, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program John Rosen. He is the LA Kings insider. John, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always my pleasure. Thanks so much for the invite.
Always, John. Brought you on to talk about the Kings. They're going to make their first visit to Winnipeg coming up on Tuesday evening. A slow start to the season for the Kings, but lately they've been turning it right around after a tumultuous first week or 10 days. They've climbed back into the playoff race, certainly now 4-3 in the Pacific Division. You know, what's been the difference from the slow start? We know that they were really struggling at home to start the season. What's been the difference that's seen them turn the year around?
I guess if you're talking about the more tangible, it's the ability to keep the puck out of their own net. They've given up only 3 goals over their last 4 games, playing that more kind of a possession-oriented LA Kings style of hockey and getting very good goaltending for both Jonas Enroth and Jonathan Quick. And on top of that, their special teams have solidified. But if you're looking more for kind of the intangible cerebral a little bit, it's that some of the younger defensemen, the Kings have really kind of gone through a little bit of a minor revolution on their back end right now with several veterans having moved on, having retired. There really has been a transfer of power to some younger defensemen. You're seeing an increase in the minutes for guys like Alec Martinez, for Braden McNabb, who's now skating on a top pair with Drew Doughty. Jake Muzzin has absorbed wider roles this season. All these guys are playing at or above 20 minutes. Of course, Drew Doughty leading the league in ice time. But with all this combined right here, you're seeing a little bit more comfort in all situations. There were some special teams challenges earlier in the year. Everybody a little bit more comfortable, and as a result, they're keeping the puck out of their own net.
You know, John, we talked about the Kings, and obviously there's panic there. You know, they start off with struggling, and they're 0-3. One trend I see in bouncing back to 4-3 is that they're not playing from behind, and it seems like when I watch them play, when they have to try and generate scoring chances and opportunities, and they're not the quickest squad, they're having trouble and they're forcing it a bit, whereas when they're playing tied or with the lead, they play quote-unquote LA Kings hockey. Do you think that's accurate?
Absolutely. And that was something that the Kings struggled with last year. Generally, and especially when you look at the 2011-12 through 2013-14 seasons for the Kings, this was a team that was very difficult to come back on. But last year, this team struggled in maintaining leads and was giving up third period leads. And you've seen a better ability to, so far, hold on to that. You know, when you play in San Jose, as the Kings did on Thursday, especially in the Kings-Sharks rivalry, I mean, I'm not sure if there's a better team in the league that comes out over the first 10 minutes like maniac, like the San Jose Sharks do when they're at home. They beat off the crowd, and there's great noise there. And the Kings really stemmed that tide. Back on Thursday evening, they got the game's first goal, got a big second goal late in the period on the power play. So they're getting bigger power play goals right now. And even though the Kings might not have individuals that are real burners, that are guys that are going to be that, Carl Hagelin or, any number of players on a team like Tampa Bay or something like that, this is still a team that plays very well to one of the staples of Daryl Sutter and, one of the tenets of the modern game. Is get that puck into the hands of your forwards as quickly as possible. And even though the Kings might not be individually the fleetest of skate team in the league, they're still good at transitioning that puck very quickly from the hands of the defenseman up into the hands of the forwards. And you look at some of these, again, these young defensemen. Alec Martinez is very good at that. Drew Doughty, obviously, something that he excels at. Braden McNabb greatly improved. Jake Muzzin, another one of those modern defensemen that plays that very versatile game, too. So they are working that puck up quickly, and absolutely they have been, finding success with playing with the lead.
John, Kings head coach Daryl Sutter the last few games has put the forward lines a little bit in the blender there, taking Milan Lucic off of that first line and then putting him with Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli, which has bumped Tanner Pearson down to that third line, and it seemed to work. Jeff Carter had 4 points the other night, and then Tyler Toffoli had 2 goals last night. Do you see those lines, those top two lines, staying the same, at least for the short term?
Yeah, and they've found balance. I would expect that, barring, anything that happens, when the team plays in Edmonton tomorrow night, that's what we'll probably see when we're in Winnipeg on Tuesday. You have better balance right now. You've seen better production from both of the top two lines. And Milan Lucic last night had his first 2-point game as a King, had a really nice assist in which he led a 2-on-1 by moving the puck quickly away from Noah Hanifin, who tried to make a late pinch as the Hurricanes were trailing late. And that set up a really nice 2-on-1 where he was able to, on a give and go, dish to Tyler Toffoli, who shot off the pass to give the Kings a 3-0 lead. So Daryl has been very complimentary of Lucic, too. And even when he hadn't been putting up points and he had his first goal of the season against San Jose on Thursday night, he has still been somebody who had been providing that emotion, providing that net front presence. He's getting more comfortable within the Kings' systems and obviously just with this, kind of change of lifestyle and switching coasts and whatever comes with that, in a National Hockey League career. But he's been good over these last several games, and Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli, as Daryl really doesn't look at lines, he likes to look at pairs of two. And so you see pairs, he doesn't want to break up the Kopitar-Gavrik, he doesn't want to break up the Jeff Carter-Tyler Toffoli. Both of those pairs have been finding better success as of late.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is John Rosen. John is the LA Kings insider discussing the Kings ahead of their visit to Winnipeg on Tuesday night. John, I wanted to ask you about Jake Muzzin. He's obviously having had to take on a more significant role on the back end of the Kings as they've gone through their transition. Obviously, we know about Slava Voynov and the other people that have left the roster over the last couple of years. Is Jake Muzzin growing into a more significant role with this Kings team on the back end?
Absolutely, and there's some interesting observations there by the coaching staff, too. I mean, you look at Jake Muzzin, you've always kind of felt that he has that offensive inclination. Obviously, he's one of the top possession players and possession-driving defensemen in the National Hockey League. But this is somebody that's averaging, through his career, just under 0.4 points a game, and that's awfully good for a defenseman. But when you speak with Daryl Sutter, when you speak with John Stevens, who works with the defense so closely, they see him as a defenseman, where all of his chances, whether they, occur on offense, come from strong defensive play and being good in his own zone. So you haven't seen him put up points yet this season, but his play in his own zone, especially now that, over the last 4 games that he's been playing with Alec Martinez, maybe two guys there where you think that maybe they have that kind of offensive bent, that's helped solidify the Kings on the back end and keep the puck out of their own net. They've been very good. That chemistry has been there together between the two players. He just hasn't been able to cash in just as yet to put up points on the power play. The power play is coming along, so I would think that would probably you know, raise his point total right now. But again, you know, he's part of that young Kings defensive core where he is finding that success, you know, back in his own end, and he's seeing more responsibilities on the penalty kill where the team has been successful over the last several games and in all situations for this Kings team.
John, it's clear that the LA Kings brought in Christian Ehrhoff to replace some of what was lost by not having Slava Voyanov on the roster. I know it's early on here and the point totals haven't necessarily been there as of late for Christian Ehrhoff, but how has he looked as far as fitting into this LA Kings defense?
So far, the last two games represented a step up. He has power play assist in each of the last two. And somebody that, you know, one of the reasons that he was brought on was to help out this Kings power play, which I believe tied for 10th in the league, maybe 11th in the league last season. So they already had a pretty good base. Took them a little bit of time this year earlier on to get going. But that's really been the staple of his play. You know, he's somebody that is the veteran. He's now the second oldest player on this Kings team, just after Marian Gaborik, and is, again, fits in, even though he's a little bit older. Is still a player that, you know, like Jake Muzzin, like Alex Martinez, you know, that can push the puck, push the play, very good at moving his feet and getting out of trouble that way, but a very good skater. He's got a very, very hard shot, too, as we all know. So it's a little too early to get really kind of that kind of full encompassing reflection on what he's doing, but certainly with some very big power play assists and primary assists, he's shown the contributions over the last two games.
John, Anze Kopitar, obviously, you know, he's 28 years old, coming on final year of a $6.8 million deal. Is this going to get done shortly, or is this going to hang around?
I don't know shortly it's going to get done. The Kings know the value of what Anze Kopitar, all 200 feet of the ice, all situations against the league's top players, means to this club. And it's something that perhaps even Kopitar has a little bit of leverage, because the Kings' center depth is not as good as it was when the Kings were winning Stanley Cups in 2012 and 2014. Mm-hmm. You look at the contributions made by Mike Richards, made by Jarrett Stoll. I mean, you look back at 2012, you can make an argument that the Kings don't win that 2012 Stanley Cup without Mike Richards and what he did and how the rest of the team kind of fed off of him, especially when they got to that playoff series against Vancouver. Even Colin Fraser played a very, very important role on that 2012 Cup team as well. Now the Kings have guys such as Nick Shore and Andy Andreoff playing in third, fourth line roles. And these are guys that are going to develop into good young hockey players too. But these are guys. Nick Shore played, I believe, 39 games last year. It was a roughly half of a season. And Andy Andreoff, too, is somebody that's played even fewer games than that. But these are guys trying to find an identity. So as the Kings have their center depth tested a little bit, you've seen major minutes by Anze Kopitar, who has played more minutes per game than any forward in the NHL right now. So it's going to happen. I don't think there's any concern right now at this point. They still obviously have until July 1st. There have been, from my understanding, you know, conversations. I don't think it's something that they're pounding and focusing on every single day. I hope to have an update on that later. But absolutely, that's a top priority. And, you know, however it gets done, I would expect him relatively soon to be re-signed in Los Angeles.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is John Rosen. John covers the Los Angeles Kings. You can follow him on Twitter at LA Kings Insider. John, you know, you look around the league, and we all know that the NHL is very much a copycat league. And watching the Blackhawks be successful last year, a lot of teams are moving to the speed, skilled, you know, aspect of the game. Whereas a couple years ago, they were emulating the Kings and their, you know, big, bruising, physical, grind-you-down-low style that we don't see that many teams employing anymore. The Kings certainly still do. The Blues employ that. The Ducks certainly can grind you down low. The Blue Jackets, when they're not 0-8, can do the same thing. You know, is there any talk at all in the Kings front office that they'd like to, you know, improve the foot speed so that they can, you know, keep pace with some of the other teams in the league that employ more of a up-and-down style as opposed to the grind-it-down-low style?
I heard that 2 years ago, and it wasn't necessarily speed, but the Kings were looking to infuse more skill into their lineup, and that's when they went out and got Anze Kopitar. That was something that I remember chatting with Dean Lombardi about. So I think there's still a potential for the team to continue to add skill. There's also an intriguing player who's only gotten into one game this year, but it's a highly skilled player named Doris Wheel, who might get an extra opportunity in games to come. And he's able to play center as well. But again, this is a young player with one game of NHL experience to his credit right now. But, you know, like I was saying before, the Kings have a good, mobile, younger now defense that is able to push the play up the ice. And I think there are a lot of similarities between the Kings and Jets. you might not see the same kind of high-end skill on Winnipeg. You might not see the same type of scoring depth that you have with the Jets on the Kings. But these are two teams that have good mobile defense, for the Jets especially. There's a great defense there. This is a very, very heavy and extraordinarily difficult Winnipeg team to play against, where the Kings kind of have that MO as well. But even though the Kings, again, you're not going to see those types of you know, Tyler Johnsons or whoever, whichever fast player you want to refer to in this league, the Kings are still very good at that transition game, getting the puck up the ice quickly into the hands of the forwards. And the Kings play with such a strong structure that they play to those abilities as well. And even though, you know, Dwight King, who's injured right now, he might not be the fastest skater in the National Hockey League by a little bit, you know, he's still somebody that can play a little bit faster than you would think that his size indicates. Milan Lucic is the same way. You know, he got the ice, puck up the ice quickly in that give and go with Tyler Toffoli that led to the goal last night as well. So individual speed, not quite there, but the way that the Kings play, the structure, the systems play, they're able to move the puck up the ice quickly. And there are some similarities between the Kings and Jets.
John, we were at the MTS Center last night for the Jets game, so I saw that you tweeted this out. Daryl Sutter picked up his 550th career win, and he moved past Mark Crawford into sole possession for 14th place NHL all-time wins list amongst coaches. Are you surprised that this milestone hasn't gotten more attention?
Yeah, you know, I think it maybe it just was because the win was picked up on a road game that it didn't get as much attention, but the longevity, the career that he has there, it's remarkable right now. And you know, I think that, you know, when we're thinking of Daryl Sutter, I, you know, the first things that come to mind are the post-game press conferences that always seem to take a life of their own. We didn't get any beautiful quotes, I don't think, last night. But, again, that's all just window dressing right there. I mean, you're talking about experienced and accomplished coach, you know, with three coaching stops in the National Hockey League. And it draws that immediate respect, you know, from the players and from the people that are in that Kings room. But, yeah, you know, it's somewhat surprising. I think that everyone around the league, there's that respect for Daryl Sutter. And, you know, everything that he's been able to accomplish, especially here in Los Angeles, is certainly recognized around the NHL.
John, final question. You know, one of the other writers in town, Lisa Dillman, had an article, kind of a letter written to her by Dean Lombardi. And Lombardi's obviously a experienced, successful, and an emotional manager. How much do you think, and you cover the team on day-to-day basis, how much do you think what happened with Mike Richards and the other issues surrounding the Kings over the past year, 2 years, have affected him day-to-day?
I think they've affected him pretty significantly. I think there has been stress, obviously, with what has happened in terms of the Mike Richards and Jarrett Stoll situations. These are obviously two players that formed a very significant part of this Los Angeles core and what they were able to do over two championship seasons. These are two players that were amongst the most you know, respected and tenured veterans in the Kings room during their championship run. And when you speak with Dean, he's very keen on recognizing the establishment of a culture and the establishment of a team identity, which the identity comes before the culture. But you look at Jarrett Stoll. This was a player who came over with Matt Green in a trade that sent Lubomir Vishnovsky to the Edmonton Oilers. And right there, you have the pillars of kind of those championship expectations and that original kind of establishment of a team identity right there. Both, you know, Matt Green, an alternate captain with the Kings, everybody knows, and Jarrett Stoll has worn the A before too. Everybody knows what those two players within the Kings locker room, you know, meant to the team. And obviously, that trade for Mike Richards with Philadelphia, that kind of accelerated the championship expectations and kind of solidified what it meant at that time to build that as well. So this is something that he takes very personally, and especially, I mean, when you see him on the ice at those championship parades, he's kind of stalking around the stage and, you know, whispering to the players' ears. I mean, there has been an excellent relationship between him and the players, and he's, you know, it's something that obviously when any team wins a championship that comes to light like that. But yeah, I can't imagine how difficult it has been. You know, I think he's moving forward, and he says he's writing a book. So I wonder if he'll be able to share a lot of this in the book. That's going to be something I would very, very much like to read whenever that does come out.
John Rosen is the LA Kings insider. He joins us this morning from Los Angeles. John, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for doing this, and we'll see you Tuesday evening here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, see you in a little bit. Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to John Rosen for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it'll be available on tsn1290.ca or, of course, just subscribe to the program. Get a sent to your iPod each and every week via iTunes. It's one final segment for this Saturday morning, and it is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Valerie Nichushkin, the Dallas Stars' former first-round pick, has 0 points in 4 games this season. Last week, he was a healthy scratch for consecutive games, with Dallas Stars head coach Lindy Ruff saying to the team's website, "I want to get him back in. I want to get him playing, but I think I have to get his head in the right place first." After a 2014-15 season that was pretty much a lost season, thanks to hip surgery, are you at all concerned with about Nikushkin's slow start to 2015-16?
No, not really, Drew. I mean, they're switching him right wing, left wing. He's a really talented young player. Coming off, as you mentioned, the surgery, significant surgery, didn't play a lot last year. They have a lot of offensive options, too. So it's not like he's going to get thrust into big-time minutes here easily. Be patient with this guy. He's worth the wait if he can get things on track.
Nichushkin's a really talented player, and I know Richie's a huge fan of his, as am I. I think everybody's a fan of his. This Dallas Stars team is too talented right now for him not to be a huge part of that. So I wouldn't be that surprised, and I'm not surprised that Lindy Ruff is benching him. We saw Torts already bench Ryan Johansson because he wasn't happy with the way he was playing. So Nichushkin has too much skill. He'll get it going. Just like Carter and Toffoli did for L.A., Drew. I mean, it's too much of a small sample size to be too worried. If we're having this conversation, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, I might be a little bit more surprised, but he'll get it going for Dallas.
I should revise that he now has 1 point in 5 games, so I wanted to be accurate for the record.
Point well made, Drew.
Thank you. The fine print of the Mike Richards settlement, we were just talking about it with John Rosen, has finally been released, and Richards will get paid $10.5 million by the Kings for the next 16 years. In terms of the NHL salary cap, the biggest cap hit comes this year, when they will pay him $3.12 million. In future years, the number on average will be $874,000. If Mike Richards had been bought out by the LA Kings through the typical method, the cost to the Kings would have peaked at $4.2 million for 2 seasons. Do the other 29 NHL teams have justification being furious at this settlement, as they reportedly are?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I mean, again, well, 100%. They have justification for being upset. But at the same time, it's technically within the rules, so that can only go so far. I think the result of this is going to be more challenges to player contracts, especially player contracts that you do not want. And while there's a no precedent clause apparently in this agreement, I'm not so sure that will have as much have the desired effect. And so, Drew, I think you're going to see teams that don't want guys try and buy them out on the grounds that the Kings did here. And I think it's a slippery slope.
I don't know as far as the NHL teams, you know, being upset about this decision, Drew. I just think that it's positive that this situation is going to be over, and that Mike Richards and the LA Kings can move forward away from this, because I think it's been an unfortunate situation, and to me that's how I'm looking at it. As far as if the NHL teams are upset or not, to me, I don't really care.
Well, when the Kings add somebody to the deadline this year, as you with some extra money, those teams won't be happy.
We spoke about it earlier with Frank Saravelli, but for the first time in the 98-year history, the majority of NHL players do not hail from Canada. Canadian-born players made up 49.7% of the 680 players to appear in an NHL game in the first 2 weeks of this season. Is this news a good thing for the entire hockey world, Canada included, or a bad sign for Canadian hockey?
No, it's a good sign, and I'll tell you why. I mean, Canada's won the gold at the last two Olympics. Canada won gold at the World Juniors. I mean, Canada is still the best hockey nation, bar none. I think there's other good countries as well. I mean, the U.S., what's happened, Drew, is there has been a huge growth in USA hockey, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's where they want growth. You're starting to see hockey players come from California, Arizona, Alabama, you know what I mean? Like, Mm-hmm. Austin Matthews will be drafted first overall. We're expecting to be drafted first overall. He's from Arizona, born and raised in Arizona. That's a good thing. So 50% of the NHL is still Canadian. So, I mean, whereas 15 years ago it was 60%. So this isn't a sign of things to come. Sure, participation is down in minor hockey, and that's because of, we've talked about it, it's expensive to play hockey. That's something that needs to be readdressed more so. Yes. I wouldn't start getting too worried about these numbers. I mean, hockey is an international game, Drew, and that's good. You want it to grow across the world. So, you know, Canada hockey's fine.
Last one, last Saturday, defenseman Derek Forbort made his NHL debut for the LA Kings.
UND.
And in doing so, became the final 2010 first-round pick to play in the NHL. Who's the best player from that draft?
Well,
that's a good question. That's a good, strong draft year.
You know, quickly on Derek Forbort, Drew, can I have this or we don't have enough time?
Yeah, sure, go quickly.
You know, he's a guy you see as a stay-at-home guy that UND, that drafted by the Kings and UND brought along, and you think to yourself, okay, this guy's going to come along quicker. I mean, I saw him play probably 4 years ago now. To think that he got took them this long to get to the NHL, and with the need that they've suddenly created there in Los Angeles, they have to be pretty disappointed. And, you know, they had the Thomas Hickey pick too high up. So they've had some players who've kind of flamed out a bit in the top of the draft and have still been able to be successful overall. So that's a testament to Lombardi being able to move some pieces. And some of those moves have worked out, some of them haven't, but I do give him credit for trying.
You know, I don't have it in front of me here. I didn't have a chance to go over it, but I mean,
it's in the show plan.
There's, yeah, well, I didn't have a chance, Drew,
it's
unfortunately.
Like I gave it to you guys.
That's the Tyler Taylor draft, right? So, I mean, yeah. It's tough to pick between those two guys. I think you'd probably take Sagan over.
Do you want me to get into this? It's Drew's question of the week. I mean, it's Sagan's best player, Drew, or it's Tarasenko, right? Isn't that?
Yeah. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
I mean, Gudbrandsson, you know, stay at home defenseman.
Gudbrandsson.
No? Okay.
He's not any good.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
Not really a debate.
He's a good guy.
Sagan,
and
Tarasenko.
No, not good
enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something
fixed
like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Cheers or jeers, gentlemen?
Well, I finally looked it up here. You got Cam Fowler's in there, Riley Sheehan. I'm going to cheer Richie. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Richie. Richie's my best friend. This day's all about him.
Yeah, I'm going to cheer. We're going to be a family here. I'm going to cheer you guys. You're going to give me a lot of positive attention today. I appreciate it. It's great to have Sean in the studio, and that was just a lot of fun. Had a great time.
That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Frank Zaravelli, John Rosen, and Mike Greenlay. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on illegalcurve.com. Just subscribe to the show and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, Keener Jerseys, and Royal Sports. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris and producer Sean, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Bomber Game Day here on TSN 1290.